Hey, how's it going, everybody? Good to see you all. I almost said y'all. That's what happens when you go to Oklahoma. I am so blessed to be here. Seriously, so grateful. Preaching to you about Jesus is one of my favorite things in the world, and I consider it such a privilege to be able to speak to you today. So just thank you for having me so much. Why don't we pray, and then we'll jump into Judges chapter 6. That's where we're going to be. God, we love you. Thank you so much for this time, this place, this people. I know you have something you want to say to every single one of us. So I just pray that you would break through our human limitations, my human speaking, our human listening, our comprehension. Help us to understand who you are and what you want and what you have for every single one of us in this room. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the scriptures. Thank you for the voice that speaks through the Spirit. I pray that that voice would speak clearly now to all of us. We love you, Jesus. We give you this time. In your name, amen. Amen. So we're going to be in Judges chapter 6. Oops, hold on. Sorry, I'm a little rusty at this. Let me put my timer down here so I don't go over. We're in Judges chapter 6. That's where we're going to be. So here's my intro. What if I told you it was your responsibility to cure cancer or to make peace in the Middle East or to answer the age-old question of why is it that Kanye can charge $120 for a white t-shirt? He can do it. He's Kanye. Those are impossible problems. And life is full of impossible problems, bigger problems than the last one. The other two were pretty big. Personally, with a lot of life's giant problems, I don't have the skills or the resources or the strength to deal with them. And I'm guessing if you're human, you're probably here dealing with something. I think every single one of us comes to this room with stuff we're dealing with, situations that feel out of our control, situations that feel too big for us to be able to handle. I feel like life is constantly throwing challenges at us. I mean, how many of you guys constantly find yourself feeling just exhausted with the pressures of life? Anyone want to be able to admit that? Okay, I'm not alone. Oh, we feel overwhelmed, whether we're a student and it's the end of the school year and finals, or whether we're dealing with a sick family member, or whether we're just living life and life is constantly throwing the unexpected at us. And here's the thing that can honestly be sometimes frustrating about the Christian life. On top of all that, sometimes God ends up calling us to do things that don't seem to make any sense. Anyone ever here been called by God to do something that didn't make sense? Yeah, it can be frustrating. And sometimes with God, I'm like, hey, you know, it'd be great if you just emailed me like a bullet point list of all the things you wanted me to do in this specific order with all of the correct details laid out. That'd be great. But a lot of times God doesn't do that, right? Think about the story of Abraham. What does God say? You're going to go somewhere. Where? I'm not going to tell you. Just go. It's scary at times. It can be unclear at times. But I think that in it, there's this biblical concept that can give us so much hope, and that's the biblical concept of calling. Tonight, I'm going to be talking to you about the biblical concept of calling, because I truly believe every single one of you is called. Every single person in this room is called by God to live an exceptional life, loving Jesus and loving others. And that can be scary to realize that calling. I don't know about you, but it's easy for me to drift away from calling. It's easy for me to settle in to the normal and the routine and to not want to engage in the unexpected and the unknown. I like Romans 8:28, which says, "And we know that God works all things together for good, to the good of those who love him according to those who are called to his purpose." Now, a lot of times we focus on the first half of that verse. We know that God works all things together for good. But think about the second part. To the good of those who love him and who are called according to his purpose. Jesus is constantly showing up in your life and in my life with his purpose. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, will we submit to that purpose? Will we be available to that purpose? That is the constant question we need to be asking ourselves is, am I right now living my life according to God's purpose for me? Now, tonight I want to talk about Gideon. Judges chapter 6. If you know my style, I like to tell Bible stories. And so we're going to be jumping into certain verses, but just get ready, get queued up in Judges chapter 6. I think the verse we're going to jump into is verse 36. But I'm going to just tell you guys the story of Gideon. Gideon was a guy who was a young man in the middle of an impossible situation in Israel. You see, Israel had been invaded, and they were being oppressed by a group of people called the Midianites. And for 7 years, the Midianites had occupied Israel. And it was so bad. It was so bad. People were going and hiding in the caves and in the mountains just to get a scrap of food. They were fleeing for their lives. Just imagine a situation where your town is occupied by ISIS and you have to flee into the hills and the caves. That's the situation that he's dealing with. The Midianites would swoop in and destroy the crops and the food supply. They would wipe out the animals. They were like a swarm of locusts. It was intense. And so Israel cries out for help. They say, God, please help. And God responds, listen, I rescued you from Egypt. I gave you this land. I told you not to worship idols, but you didn't listen. And so really, you're getting what you deserve. And the amazing thing about our God is he is a God who is willing to allow us to experience the effects of our sin, and yet he is a God who does not allow that to be the end of the story. And this is not the end of the story, because God constantly is raising a redeemer to rescue and save Israel and us out of our sin. And so there's a young man named Gideon living in the middle of this mess, and he's hiding out from the enemies, and he's just trying to make some food. He's just trying to have a snack, and he's thinking, you know, this might be my last meal before the Midianites come and kill me. And what he doesn't know is he's about to have a radical encounter with God. See, what happens is an angel shows up to Gideon, and he says, Gideon, you mighty man of God. And Gideon's like, me? Like, honestly, me? Like, what? Like, he's looking over his shoulder like, are you talking about somebody else? And the angel's like, yeah, you're going to defeat the enemy. God's going to raise you up. And Gideon's like, you don't understand, angel. I am the weakest man in the weakest tribe of Israel. Like, I am the weakest in all of Israel. And the angel says, you are a mighty man of God, and you've been chosen by God for this place and time. And the thing I love about God is he sees us not as we are, but as we could be through him. God is constantly looking at our untapped potential. He's seeing past the sin, past the flaws, past the failures, past the doubt, past the unbelief. And he's looking at who he has always wanted you to be and who you can be through Jesus. And that's the heart of God. And so there's this amazing story with Gideon, where we see how hard obedience is. I'm skipping through portions of the story for the sake of time, but you know, Gideon, he gets to a point where God is raising him up to fight the Midianites, and Gideon says, basically, he has a question. He's saying to God, how are we going to do this? Like, how is this possible? I still don't understand. I know you've called me, but it still doesn't make sense to me. And he starts to doubt his calling as a mighty man of God. And so look at Judges chapter 6, verse 36. Gideon says to God, listen, God, if this is right, like if you are using me to save Israel, as you've said, then look, I'm placing a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. And if dew is on the fleece only, but the floor is dry, then I know that you will use me to save Israel, just as you said. So this is weird. Like, this is Christianese at its finest. Anyone ever heard, like, you know, oh, bro, I'm just laying out a fleece. Have you ever heard that? Have you ever said that? It's like classic Christianese. You know, I've heard that in Bible college. Like, bro, I don't know if I should date her. I'm going to lay out a fleece. It's like, what? What does it even mean? And really, like, what Gideon's asking is like, hey, God, I know you sent an angel to me in a ball of light, but I don't have enough faith. So can you do a magic trick for me? Is what he's saying, basically. Can you just like defy science? I would love it. This is what he's thinking. He's like, I would love it if you could. I'm going to take this fleece. I don't know how you get that. Do you just go up to a sheep and you're like, bah, and like rip it off? I don't know, that poor sheep. But he has a fleece. And he's like, Lord, I just want to put it in my living room. And then in the middle of the night, can you just have like a tiny rain cloud just like float over it and just like drizzle some holy water on it? And I'll wake up and the fleece will be wet, but everything else will be dry. And guess what? He wakes in the morning and that's what happens. It's like, what is going on? This fleece is wet, but my carpet is dry. The story gets better. You know it. You all know it. It's so good. Verse 38. That's what happened. When he got up early in the next morning, he wrung out the fleece, and there was enough dew to fill an entire bowl of water. Simple. That should be it. It's like, okay, God did the magic trick. Not magic. God did the miracle, right? God comes through, but he's still not sure. He's still not sure. So verse 39, I love this. Gideon. Gideon says to God, hey, don't be angry with me. I love that. He's like, I know this is unreasonable, but let me say one more thing. I want to try one more time with the fleece. He's just obsessed with this fleece. So he says, but this time, let the fleece stay dry, but just everything else should be drenched. And I'm sure God, I mean, is he rolling his eyes? I know I would be in this moment. Gideon is so frustrating. It's like we're reading this story and we're just like, come on, Gideon, what are you thinking? And I wonder, you know, is God rolling his eyes? Is God, you know, like us, does he get annoyed? Does he get frustrated and impatient with our inability to believe him at times? I know for me, like, I can get frustrated. I was a youth pastor for a long time. Most people who are my kids, they know I was very chill. There was, at least I hope they think I was, but I remember several times that they were almost lighting my office on fire, and I was kind of sitting there just like, this is fine. This is all okay. I love them, even though they're about to light everything on fire. But, you know, I remember one time a youth pastor friend of mine got frustrated at a kid, and he was on Facebook. There's a Facebook group full of youth pastors, and he said this. He said, man, guys, look at what my kid texted me today. He said, hey, Frank, is it okay if I surprise April by asking her to prom during the lesson? I'm going to be late, so I was just going to come up the stairs and ask her. I'm hoping I won't interrupt the lesson too much. I was just making sure it was all right with you. And this is my response to him. I said, hey, Frank, you should just respond with, yo, Ryan, is it cool if I come to prom and teach a Bible study? I'll be late, so I'll probably just walk on the stage during the slow dance and tell the band to pipe down. I'm hoping it won't ruin prom too much. Just making sure it's all right with you, buddy. So, like, God could totally respond sarcastically, like, to Gideon and just be like, Gideon, I'm going to find somebody else. But that's not what he does. Like, God sticks with Gideon through this whole story. Gideon is just doubting. And they're like, I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. I need signs. I need signs. And God is consistently, like, wanting to use Gideon, despite anything of Gideon's merit. Like, it's not that Gideon was, like, secretly, like, he had this untapped superpower that could wipe out the enemies. And God's like, oh, this is my only choice. I have to convince this guy. He's amazing. That's not it. Gideon was a weakling. Like, Gideon was scared. And yet God was so committed to working with Gideon. And this is something I really take to heart. The reality that God is patient with those who he calls. And every single one of you are called. And you need to know, some of you here tonight, you might be wrestling with that calling. And listen, I'm not saying you have to go work at a church. I'm saying every single one of you is called to love and serve Jesus and love and serve others in whatever context God has put you in. But some of you guys are probably, if you're like me, running from that call. And yet Jesus is patient with those who he calls. He loves to work with those who he calls. And the reality is, well, maybe you or I would pick someone else. This is a principle I really want you to take home. Jesus is not just committed to his plans, but he's committed to his people. He's not just committed to his plans. Listen, you're not disposable. God wants you to be a part of what he's doing. He's a father who looks at you and he's like, you're my kid, and I want my kid to be involved in the father's business. He loves you so much, and he so wants you to be a part of his redemptive plan to rescue and redeem and restore this fallen world. Is there anything better than that? And yet, we so often are like Gideon and we run. We so often are like Gideon and we absolutely run. I mean, think about the 12 disciples, right? You've got Thomas. He's with Jesus and yet he doubts. There's no way Jesus could rise from the dead. You watched him raise Lazarus, but he can't raise himself. You've got Judas with Jesus, and yet his doubt leads Judas to steal because Jesus isn't enough. He's taking from Jesus. You've got Peter, and Peter doubts Jesus' ability to follow out his plan, and so Peter's off chopping off the ears of guards because he thinks he knows what's best. These are the people Jesus picked. Flawed, mistaken failures, just like you and just like me. He's committed not just to his plans, but to the people that he calls. Now, I don't know about you guys if you've ever gotten gotten fleecy, like laid out a fleece. I'm going to share with you guys the time I laid out a fleece. This is my fleece story. So when I was in Bible college, I was 17, and I was talking to my friend, and we called it the garage. We said it like that. It was just a big garage, but it sounded fancier. It was like our fellowship hall, basically. The garage. And I was talking to my friend, and in the back of my mind, I felt this voice. And it was just like, one day, you're going to go to Ireland and be a missionary. And I was like, whoa, that's awesome. A message from the Lord. And back then, I'm 17, 18. I have nothing going on. I have no life. just single and just, I'd met Brooklyn, but we weren't dating yet. And just my mind was like, God, I will do whatever you want. Send me now. And every time I prayed, God was like, not yet. I was like, okay. So I start dating Brooklyn. And she moves down here, and we get married, and we take over the youth ministry. And now I'm a youth pastor, and we're doing all this stuff. And every year I'm praying, and I'm like, so God, Europe, Ireland, am I going to go? And God just kept saying, not yet. And then our church had a missions trip in 2009 to Ireland. And I was like, surely, this is the open door. And God was like, not yet, don't go on that trip. And I was like, that's weird. I'm supposed to go to Ireland, and there's a trip, and what on earth? So it's very strange. It gets to the point where I think I had just become the high school pastor, and my friend, who was a pastor from Cork, Ireland, my friend Mike Neglia, he meets with me, and we had known each other through mutual acquaintances, and he takes me out to coffee, and he's like, hey, I heard you're praying about Ireland. I need a children's ministry pastor. Will you consider coming? And I'm like, surely, this is the open door. And I pray, and God says, not yet. And I'm just like, what is going on? And so it gets to the point, I think in 2016, I'm teaching a prayer series to my youth kids, and I am praying more than I usually do. I'm trying to just tap into prayer. Prayer is something that for me, I've always struggled with to do as much as I should, if I'm honest. And so I'm walking around Vista, I'm taking these prayer walks, and I'm just like, God, I want your vision, I want your heart, I want to connect with what you're doing. And also, God, what's the deal with this whole Ireland thing? Like, I really need to know, because it's been like almost a decade of praying and just nothing, like silence, like you always just say, not yet. Like, can you please speak to me? I need some direction. I kid you not, that day, I was walking right around here. I get over to Jack in the Box, I see a homeless guy, and I feel like God tells me, go stop and talk to him. And I'm thinking, I don't want to. I am burning calories right now. I desperately need to burn these calories. And also I'm praying. And God's like, no, you need to go talk to him. So I go and I talk to the guy, and I buy him a dollar sandwich, and we're just hanging out by the dumpster. And the guy, how you do. And we're talking, and he's got this accent, and I'm like, where are you from, man? And he's like, I'm from Cork, Ireland, my boy. And I was just like, what? What? No. What? That's weird. I was just praying about that, and now there's this guy, he was drunk out of his mind, but he ended up praying for me, and it was very special and very weird. It was great. And so then I'm like, that's weird. Is God speaking? I don't know. So then 2 days later, I'm over by 7-Eleven. I see another homeless guy. And he's like, hey, man, can you buy me a bomb burrito? And I was like, I don't know what that is. So I just went inside and I just got him a normal burrito. Apparently, my youth kids that Wednesday night told me there is something called a bomb burrito. So I totally just ignored his request, which now I feel terrible. But I got him a burrito, just a normal one. And, it was lacking the bomb. But I got him one. And I'm like, hey, what's your name? And he's like, don't worry about my name, brother. And I'm like, no, what's your name? I'm like, I want to pray for you. Tell me your name. And he goes, I'll tell you what they call me. And I'm like, all right. And he goes, they call me the Irishman. And he pulls up in his shirt. He's got a tattoo of the map of Ireland on his chest and the words Irish tattooed on his knuckles. And I'm just like, what? This is not normal. I'm not like a mystic spiritualist who's like, there are signs and wonders behind every corner. Turns out there are. We just aren't looking for them, apparently. So I'm freaking out. I'm like, this is weird. I go home. I'm talking to my wife, and I'm like, this is weird, right? She's like, yeah, this is weird. And we're just like, well, maybe. I'm totally doing the Gideon thing. I'm like, God, maybe one more sign. Just, can you just drench my carpet? No, I'm just kidding. My wife wouldn't like that. Yeah, I was like, God, if we go through the rest of the night and we're watching TV or listen to a podcast or something, and just something about Ireland pops up, like, then we'll know. So we're watching a TV show. In the TV show, two characters are planning a wedding. And one of them is like, hey, what if we had the wedding in Ireland? And we're just like, what? No. And at that point, I was like, okay, I feel like God is doing something. And I was like, I've got to talk to my dad. And I tried to talk to my dad about Ireland in the past, and my dad, this is a missionary church. My dad is always sending out missionaries. He has for years been sending out missionaries, but I think he has a soft spot for me. And he was just like, hey man, I was like, hey Ireland, dad, what about Ireland? He's like, don't go, you'll die. And also, he knew me probably the best. Like, he's probably thinking back to like his memories of me in high school and how irresponsible I was. And he's just thinking like, oh, he will die out there. But he was just telling me how hard the mission field was. And it's true. The mission field is hard. And for years I had brought it up to him, and he kind of just, was like, yeah, maybe put that idea on the shelf. This week I come to him and I'm like, hey, so I met some homeless people and they were like the ghosts of Christmas past, basically like telling me what I was supposed to do. And I'm like, what if I go to Ireland for a week? And he's like, make it 2 months. And I was like, oh, God is doing something. This is crazy. So I start making this plan to go live in Ireland with my wife for 2 months. And we were going to visit a ton of different Calvaries. And then it got to the point where then I started doubting. I started doing the Gideon thing because I was looking at finances. And I was like, there's no way I can afford this. I can't pay for this trip. I got to get over there, and I got to do transportation and rental cars, and I've got to pay rent on my place in Vista, and also I've got to pay rent in places in Ireland for 2 months. That's expensive. I don't have any money. How? No, it doesn't work. And so I'm literally just thinking, God, I can't do this. There's no way. You're obviously, not powerful enough, which is stupid. But you know how we do that when we're just looking at our situation and on paper it doesn't make sense. And it's like, yeah, God, I know you like rose from the dead, but you can't, like, financially, you can't help me. Like, just things like that. We do that. I don't know if you do that, but I did. And so I'm actually getting ready to cancel the trip. I was going to tell my wife that night to cancel the trip. And then she's like, hey, can you go to the store and pick me up something? And I'm like, okay. It's late at night, and I'm like thinking in my mind on the drive, like, how I'm going to cancel the trip. And I come up to the parking lot, and a homeless lady comes up to me, and she goes, ha ha, we got to get you down to Ireland, boy. Ha ha ha. And then she like cackled like a witch and ran away. And I was just like, oh my gosh, what? Oh, mysterious lady of the woods in the Albertsons parking lot. What is going on? I had to do it. I talked to one of my old youth pastors, and he's like, yeah, you're being like Jonah, and eventually if you don't go to Ireland, there's going to be a whale involved, and it's going to be bad. So, yeah. So my wife and I ended up going to Ireland, and you guys all remember, we stood on this stage, and you prayed for us, and we lived there for 2 months, and we stayed with 8 different Calvary Chapel pastors and lived with them and helped their ministries, and we were preaching to the people, and we were helping with the youth group, and we were helping with children's ministry and doing puppet shows and just doing everything. And at the end of the trip, I had guys saying, you know, come be my youth pastor, come be my college pastor, come be my assistant, come be my elder. Like, I had guys asking for help, and it just seemed like there was all of this opportunity. And that's where I want to pause the story, because my next point is that God, his plans don't always make sense, and he works in mysterious ways. And I want to bring it back to Gideon for a minute. So, Gideon, if you guys don't remember how that story ends, it's very weird. It's awesome. So Gideon, he's getting an army together, right? He's starting to believe, he's starting to trust. And he gets this massive army together. I don't know how he did it. Like, if I was in Israel and if I knew the weakest guy from the weakest tribe was forming an army, I'd be like, maybe let's get a different guy to form an army. But he does it. Like, through the power of God, he forms this army. And so they're marching out, and then God stops Gideon. He's like, this isn't what God sounds like, but just in my mind, this is just how I feel like the situation played out. God's like, hey, Gideon, hey, you know how you've got this massive Midianite army to fight? And you know how you've managed to scrounge up a pretty decently sized army? You know what'd be great, Gideon? What if you only had 300 guys? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that just be the best? And Gideon's thinking, do you want me to die? Is that what you want? And God's like, yeah, get rid of all those guys except 300. And all of a sudden, Gideon is down to 300 men. That is not a lot against a massive army. That is dangerous. That is scary. But God works in very mysterious ways. And they show up to the Midianite camp. And the Midianites are all sleeping. And there's this bizarre part of the story where Gideon's like nervous. And he's like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm afraid. And then he hears of a guy who has a dream. One of his guys has a dream and says, Gideon, I just had this dream that there was this loaf of bread that rolled down a hill into the Midianite camp and then just like destroyed the camp. And Gideon hears that. And then the interpretation of the dream ends up being like, Gideon, you are basically like that loaf. Like, a loaf of bread can't defeat the Midianites, but God is going to use you, you magnificent loaf. And somehow this is what happened. It's amazing. Gideon gets up with the men. Now, the Midianites, they're an army. So they've got bows, they've got arrows, they've got shields, they've got all that stuff. What does Gideon get? He's like, all right, guys, here's the weapons that God has provided us. We have torches so they can see us real good and know where to shoot. We've got pots, like, you know, like vases. We've got vases. We've got clay pots. And we've got our voices. It's going to be great. And they stand on the hill. And everyone's probably thinking, what is Gideon doing? Gideon's just following God's lead. And everyone's probably thinking, what is going to happen? This doesn't make sense. But they stand on top of the hill and they yell, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And they smash the pots and they light the torches. And the Midianites like hear the smashing of the pots and they open up their eyes from sleep and they see like torches and they think, we're surrounded, we're going to die. And they get up and they just start stabbing each other. Like, that's a real story. And they all die. It's like, that can only happen because of God. Like, Gideon didn't engineer that. Gideon wasn't like this amazing battle strategician. I think that's the right word. I think. He wasn't this amazing battle strategist. He was somebody who was just following God, and God told him to do something that on paper for humans did not make sense. And it ended up amazing. It worked out. And in my life, what I've seen just in this own story, it brings me back to my life verse, Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all your might. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. And here is where the story picks back up for me. So it had gotten to the point with the whole Ireland situation where doors were starting to really open up. My wife and I, after the trip, we knew that we weren't supposed to stay at Vista. Like, we knew that we were supposed to move, and all signs seemed to point to Ireland or England. We saw a need. We saw that there was all of these churches in Ireland who didn't have youth pastors, who didn't have college pastors, who didn't have children's ministry leaders and worship leaders. It was all of these American and local Irish guys who had moved to towns and started churches, and they were doing everything. Like they were teaching on Sundays and running the children's ministry and running the youth group and playing worship. And we just saw this need. And so our passions started kind of flaring up, and we were like, okay, we're going to move to Ireland and we're going to start this training program, and we're going to train Irish local college students to be raised up in the work of the ministry. And we're going to send them out into local churches. And we like had this plan, and this is where we were going. And the Bible college in Ireland and the one in England had said, hey, we will let you teach and you can come and teach students. And I was thinking, man, that could be our home base, one of the Bible colleges, and we can raise up these students and send them out into the UK and Ireland. And everything seemed like it was pointing to that. And then I took a week to pray and fast. And during that week, God was just like, you need to go to Oklahoma. And I was like, that makes absolutely no sense. Like, that's not the plan. Like, it's been Ireland for the last 10 years. Like, why would I go there? My wife's family is in Oklahoma, but that's really all there was. There's no open doors. There's no opportunities. There's no jobs. Like, everything. I mean, not even any real, like, not a lot of Calvaries out there. It's just, for me, the thought of going to Oklahoma was scarier than the thought of going overseas to Europe. It was terrifying. And I started praying, and I really felt like God started speaking to me and saying, hey, listen, you've spent pretty much your entire adult life in youth ministry at Calvary Vista, and your wife has been there with you. And one of the things that she could really use right now in this season, instead of going straight out from this youth ministry, just crazy, awesome camps every summer environment, you need to go to Oklahoma where she can be with her family for a while and just trust that I'm going to use you. And I started freaking out because I was like, how am I going to be used out in Oklahoma? Like, I'm a ministry guy. My whole life has been ministry. Like, there's no open doors out there. I don't have any connections. Like, I just started kind of freaking out. And I remember when this was happening, I was teaching through the book of Acts with my youth group kids. And I remember teaching that story about, it was a sermon that I titled True Power. And in the sermon, you've got the beggar, the lame beggar. And then you've got the Pharisees, and they're like, oh, don't heal that beggar. And, you know, Peter and James and John, they're wanting to heal this beggar. They're wanting to show him Jesus. They're wanting to give him life. And in my point in the message, like my whole point that I came up with is basically, man, the disciples, they've got true power because they've got their faith in Jesus. But the Pharisees, they only trust in their own power. Like, they're afraid that if Jesus is who he says he is, they're going to lose their power and they're going to have nothing. And you know, I don't know if you guys do this, but when you read the stories, it's like you kind of identify with the disciples, and then you think, oh, the Pharisees are just these bad guys. And I remember I was studying this, and I'm like getting ready to preach it. I think it was the night before I was getting ready to preach. And God speaks to me, and he's like, hey, Aaron, you think that you're being like the disciples, but actually in your heart right now, you're like the Pharisees. And I was just like, what are you talking about, God? I'm not a Pharisee. Like, my whole life, I've served you and I love you and I just want to give everything. And he says, yeah, listen, Aaron, you're like the Pharisees because you're afraid that if you obey me and go to Oklahoma, that you're going to lose all your opportunities and all of your power and all of your resources. No one's going to want you to ever speak again anywhere. No one's going to want to listen to one of your Bible studies. You're just going to go out and work at a department store or something and just like fade into obscurity, and your ministry career will be over. And God was speaking to me, and he's like, this is how little faith you have. This is why you're like a Pharisee, because you don't trust me that I have the true power, and it's obedience that leads to fulfillment. It's obedience that leads to God opening up for us his calling and purpose for us. But in my mind, I just had this idea that Ireland was the thing, and that's where ministry was just going to be great and awesome, and I was going to be used, and I thought I was going to go to Oklahoma and just die, basically. And man, God is so amazing when he just corrects us and just gives us a swift kick in the pants, you know, when he corrects our hearts and shows us the darkness in our hearts and shows us our doubt and shows us our insecurity. And that's absolutely what he exposed to me. And so at that point, it was like, okay, God, we got to trust. We got to trust that what you have for us is better than what we can imagine. And so we set out for Oklahoma, which I'm sure probably confused a lot of people. people thinking, they told us it was going to be Ireland. Like, why are they going there? That's weird. I'm sure there was people who maybe thought, oh, you know, Aaron's wife has family out there and she probably just, you know, kind of pressured him. Didn't happen at all. She was fully on board with Ireland. She was weirded out when I said Oklahoma. She couldn't believe it. And so we ended up going. And man, it was hard at first. We ended up living with her grandma for a while, which was great because the rent was free and her grandma is such a sweetheart. But just, I mean, that was hard coming from just the life we had here to living with a relative. For me, I had no work. And I said, God, what do I do for work? And he said, go back into freelance, which is what I used to do before I worked here. I ran a little freelance web design business. And so I start doing freelance and it's so hard. And my clients were just, it was so much to go back into that and just working long hours and web design and trying to, you know, support myself and raise money to get by. And there was no opportunity to really do any of the things that I loved in ministry. I remember going around and kind of just knocking on doors and saying like, hey, like, so I was this pastor at this church for a long time and I'm looking for ministry opportunities. And everywhere I went, people were just like, who are you? Like, what's a Calvary Chapel? Like, what? Like, no, buddy, you're fine. Like, just, you can come to church and hang out, but we don't need your help with anything. It was so hard for me. I don't know if any of you guys get into like Enneagram stuff. Some of you guys are like, what is that? That sounds weird. If you're a millennial, you know what I'm talking about. So it's basically a personality chart. I'm a two. The two is the helper, okay? It's like you want to help, you want to serve, you want to bless people. But the dark side of it, and this just comes from just studying myself and my personality, I discovered that the dark side of me is I had developed a need to be needed. I had realized that for me, being a youth pastor for so long had put me in a place where people needed me. They needed me to love them and care for them and give them advice and pray for them and preach to them. And it was something that I wasn't seeking after, but I had found myself so comfortable in that place. And when I got out to Oklahoma, it was like, nobody needs me. and it just, there was this empty feeling of like, man, like, who am I? Like, if I'm not sorry, it's bringing back the feelings. It was this idea of like, if I'm not a youth pastor, like, what am I, you know? And they're like, there's no opportunities. Like, what do I even do? And it's this idea of like, what have I done, you know? And again, God brought me back to that verse, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will direct your path. And I started reading this book, this book by a guy named Sky Jatani called With, and it was bringing out these ideas of so many times as Christians, we live our lives wanting to live life either under God, you know, where it's like, man, God, I'm going to just live under your rule and I'm going to just focus on your rules. Or we live life over God, where it's almost like we're holding something over God. Like, man, God, I followed the rules. I did all the right things. So now you have to bless me. Sometimes we live life for God, which is where I found myself identifying my whole life. The place I naturally gravitate towards is like, I want to serve God and do things, and I feel most useful and most valuable when I feel like I am serving God in ministry. And the book just was revealing, you know what, all those things are great, but really, it's not about living life under God or over God or for God. It's about living life with God. It's about living life with Jesus. And I'm like, God, what do I do? Do I go start a Bible study? Do I go, you know, start a church? Like, what do I do? And God said, why don't you just start taking walks around your neighborhood and praying? And man, that was so good for me. I lived in this beautiful little neighborhood, amazing weather all the time. And I would just go on these walks and just listen to an audiobook and read the Bible. And I'd pray. And God just started centering my heart. And I was realizing that I was having this identity crisis. And the identity, you know, this idea of like, who am I? What am I? You know, I used to be this youth pastor. Like, no one even knows I'm a pastor out here. Like, I don't even, like, and God was like, that's not your identity. Your identity is you're a child of God and you're loved by God and you're with God. And man, that just floored me. And I started seeing some amazing things happen. My wife just started thriving out there. I mean, just amazing. Like, you know, when she was out here, it was really hard for her to make friends. She was always with the youth, which she loved so much. She actually still, there's some girls that came through that youth group that she still considers just dear, precious friends. But there wasn't really anyone her own age around at the time for her to connect with. And that was always this kind of hole in her heart. Well, out there in Oklahoma, we started attending this church, and all of a sudden she's making friends her own age who are going through similar struggles and similar things. And she's in this small group of girls at a Bible study that we go to. And it's just like all of a sudden she's thriving, and we're having friends over for dinner, and just, she is loving it. We're spending time with her family. You know, her parents split up when she was young, and she was only able to really see her dad over the past decade, like a few times. And now we're in Oklahoma where her mom and dad both live, and she's getting to see them and spend time with them. And you know, for the first time in our married life, we were able to actually really attend church. It was hard. We would come in here periodically, but you know, we were so involved in youth ministry on Sundays and Wednesdays, it was very hard for us to really attend church consistently as an adult couple. And now for the first time in our marriage, we're going to church, and just, we show up and no one is needing us to do anything, which for me was hard, for her was great. And it was something that we both needed. To just show up and be human, to just show up and exist. And Jesus started leading me to serve behind the scenes. He started showing me the value of being a volunteer again. I started in ministry as a volunteer, but I had been leading things for so long. Jesus started bringing me to ways to volunteer. We started a nonprofit ministry to build websites for missionaries and churches. And we did that. And it was so amazing to see these missionaries in Ireland and England that we'd made friends with. And now we're able to provide them with websites and graphics. And some great people from Vista here had joined the team and wanted to be involved in that. It was so beautiful to see. At the church that we attended, we were going to a home group on Monday nights. And then after time, they said, hey, would you consider stepping into leadership and just helping lead this home group? And for us, it was such a different type of ministry, but it's so beautiful to be around these young adults and to just help them walk more towards Jesus. We stumbled upon another Calvary Chapel out there, and the Calvary was filled with amazing servants, youth workers, people who loved and just poured their heart out constantly for the youth ministry out there. And God just put this burden on our heart. Man, we did youth ministry. We know how hard it can be, how tiring it can be. What if we started a Bible study to pour into these guys and encourage them? And so my wife's cousin had a coffee shop, and we opened up that coffee shop on Thursday nights. And for about a year, we led that Bible study. We ended up just having a heart for podcasting, which can sound strange if you don't know what it is, but it's just basically internet radio broadcasts. And we started recording short devotional messages and Q&As and putting them out there. And for me, I was thinking about all my youth, my kids that were in my youth group. Like, how can I still reach them? How can I still broadcast something to them that they might click on and be encouraged? But through that, it turned into a podcast network. We started getting other people from Calvary Chapel saying, hey, we want to be involved and we want to podcast with you. And then Calvary Global Network in Costa Mesa ended up hiring me to like run this new thing that just kind of emerged from it. And so I got hired part-time to work with them. And it's been crazy. It's just been crazy. There's been so many things that have happened, and none of it was what I expected. Like, I thought I'd be in Ireland at this point, like teaching at a Bible college and starting this ministry. And yet God has me in Oklahoma. God has me and my wife in Oklahoma. And the strangest thing is, like, I used to think missionary work is overseas. But what I realized is missionary work is everywhere. It's in Ireland, it's in England, it's in Oklahoma, it's here in Vista. And if you're a Christian, and if you're here in Vista, God has placed you here as a missionary to reach the people in your community and love them and reach out to them. For me, the whole mentality I've been trying to have through all this is loaves and fishes. Because, man, I respect those of you here who serve in ministry and work a full-time job, you're bivocational. I didn't know what that was like. Like, I was here working at the church, and it was one of the greatest jobs I've ever had because I was able to focus so much of my time. But now I understand what it's like to want to give so much of your time, and yet you have to provide. And so you're doing this other job and trying to make things work. And for me, there's been so many times where I've been frustrated because it's like, God, I just want to give you more. But Jesus reminds me of the loaves and fishes. You know, the kid who says, Jesus, this is all I have. And he multiplies it. And I've seen that happen over and over again. And there's been challenges on the mission field. And yeah, like I said, I call Oklahoma the mission field because we're there with a missionary mindset. in that Bible study that we started, you know, it was very inconsistent. We'd have weeks where there was 20 people, and then all of a sudden the next week there'd be two or three. And I remember one particular week where no one showed up, and I'd prepared what I had thought was, you know, just a killer message that was going to encourage people, and no one showed up. And I left that night just driving with, you know, like a single tear going down my cheek, just like, oh, you know, just, yeah, you know, feeling unneeded. And God just reminded me, I'm here. And I love you, and I appreciate the message that you made because it glorifies me, and you can use it some other time. Just keep trying. Just show up next week and see who comes. And sure enough, next week, there's a few people there. And God just keeps reminding me not to give up. You know, he's provided. He really has. There's been times out there where, you know, God has provided like really generously, and we've had just donations from people here come in, and my wonderful grandparents have been, you know, chipping in to support us, and just we've had months like that where just everything's been great, and then we've had other months where it's like, oh my gosh, like we're gonna run out of money, like what are we doing? I need to go get a normal job. I need to stop doing this, and then at the last minute, God comes in and provides, and it has blown my mind every time, and I have such a different kind of faith now than I did before, where I'm like, God, I realize my limitations. I realize that I'm not Superman. I can't save everybody. I can't do everything I want to do, but I love you and I want to follow you and I want to trust you with my life. And it's been this roller coaster. It's been this absolute roller coaster. I'm wrapping up here. So I don't know if the band coming back up? Yes. Yes. Oh, I love it. I'm so excited. So the roller coaster for me has been, it's been crazy. Like, there was one week where, so God basically spoke to me and was like, hey, it's when we were launching the podcast network, Good Lion is the name of it. Look it up, Good Lion, goodlion.io. There's lots of great Christian podcasts by people on there. But I was building the website for it and kind of forming it. And God really put this burden on my heart to do it. But in order to do so, I had to stop working for some of the clients I was working for and kind of put them on the back burner. And it got to the point where like basically all of my savings like had dried up. And I was like, I've been working for basically free for 2 months. Like, God, this doesn't make sense on paper. Like, I am frustrated right now. And I remember I then started in my own strength trying to make things happen. I was like, okay, I'm the husband. I got to provide. I need to go and do something. And so I like stopped doing the podcast thing, and I kind of jumped into like fix it mode. And I started trying to do sales for my business, and I started trying to get people to buy my websites and hire me for things. And I was just contacting people and putting my name out there. And after like 2 weeks of doing that, just nothing. Nothing had happened. And I was frustrated. I was grumbling. I was just like, God, why would you do this to me after me trying to serve you? And my wife looks at me and she goes, have you prayed like at all lately? And I was like, well, for the food. And she's like, come on, like you need to pray. Like, what are you doing? You're trying to do this on your own. God's obviously in it. Come on. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to pray because I need to do something. And she basically kicked me out of the house to go pray. Not in a mean way, but she was just like, you need to go pray. And she gave me the look, and I knew, you know? And so I left, and I took a walk around the little jogging field by the school we live by. And I was just like, God, I can't do this. I stink. I'm nothing. I thought I was great at websites, but no one wants to buy from me. I need your help. Like, I can't do it. And literally that next day, I get a phone call from a guy who's like, hey, are you still doing websites? And like no one told him, and I don't know how he found out, but somehow he knew and he called me. And it wasn't like the biggest job in the world, but it was enough to get me through that month. And seriously, since then, God has just continued to blow me away. And my attitude shifted. And the times where I lack in faith, I'm trying my best to turn to God and just do what every missionary has to do and what every single one of you has to do, to turn to God and say, I don't understand what's going on, but I know you've called me and I know I'm here for a reason, and I love you and I just want to obey. And I don't always do it perfectly, but I can say that the times that I have done it, I've been so blessed. Belief is so much better than doubt, and God really does have this amazing plan for us. And so the last thing I'll say is this, it's this long, strange journey that I'm on and that you're on, we're all on, where we need to understand that God isn't going to tell us what's going on a lot of the times. He reveals it step by step. When I showed up to Oklahoma, I just had this burning desire to work with young people again, because that's what I had done here. And God said, you need to rest, and you need to trust me, and you need to walk with me, and you need to be with me. And the transformation my heart has had has gone from this burning desire of I have to do and I have to accomplish and I have, like, I'm only useful unless I'm serving others and helping others, and if I'm not helping somebody, then I'm nothing. God has brought me to this place of understanding that I am his child and I am loved and I am valuable to him simply because he loves me and simply because I'm his kid and he's my father in heaven. And the place I'm at now, got just recently, the church that we're attending, they reached out to me and they're planting a church in the town next to us. And they said, hey, we've been praying about you. And would you and your wife consider being a part of our church plant and helping with the youth and going back into youth ministry? And we prayed about it. And that's kind of where we're at now. And I just share that with you because I would just love if you could be praying for me. I have no idea what I'm doing. I never do. I've realized I can't. I can't have a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan or a 1-day plan. But the plan is just Jesus right now. What does he have? And that's what I want to share with you, because I've talked about me a lot. I'm sorry. I want to go back to you as we finish. So many of you today, you're probably just like me, where you don't know what God is doing. And there's things that he's put in your heart, and there's things that he's doing in your life. And you're just wondering, like, what does God have? What is he doing? What does he have for me? I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't know what the plan is. And I think he would say to you, just trust me. Just trust me and just obey. Just, oh man, I'm going to steal from that new Frozen movie. Just do the next right thing, if you've seen it. Just whatever he has, whatever he's calling you to right now, obey. And don't say, I'm too weak. Don't say, I'm nothing. Don't say, I can't do it. Say, God, I'm nothing without you, but because I have you, I can step into the things that you're calling me to do. And if you're stressed, if you're anxious, if you're frustrated about what comes next in your life, just remember Jesus in the garden, sweating the drops of blood, himself anxious, himself wondering, man, God, what is next? Like the cross, that's crazy. That's going to be painful. That's going to be horrific. And yet he trusts and God is with him. And look at the fruit and look what comes from it. Whatever you're going through, Jesus is with you, he's for you, and he's calling you. You're all called. And I just want to encourage you during this time of worship, as the band gets back up and begins to play, I want to really encourage you, be asking Jesus, what are you calling me to right now? What are you calling me to that's big? What are you calling me to that's small? What are you calling me to in my family? What are you calling me to in my friends group? What are you calling me to in my work? Is there any big, extraordinary leap of faith you want me to take? Or is there just a small act of obedience you want me to take? Maybe giving up something that isn't even a sin, but he's called you to let go of something that's become a weight in your life. Maybe taking a step of faith to do something that you would think, I'm not the guy for that. I'm not the girl for that. I can't do that. I can't love people in that way. I can't serve people in that way because I'm not equipped. I'm not the one. I think he would say to you, you are the one because I'm calling. What is it for you? Maybe it's just like it was for me. Maybe it's not to do anything, but maybe it's actually to stop doing as much as you are and to take a time of rest and to just connect with Jesus and just read the scriptures and pray and seek God and let him fill you back up. Maybe you're just here and you've been pouring out for so long that cup is dry. And he would say to you, it's time to be filled. Just sit and receive. Just take a break. It's not laziness to take a break. It's obedience if that's what God's calling you to do. So thank you all for listening. I'm going to pray for us. Jesus, we love you. I thank you so much for the wonderful people at Calvary Vista and their faithfulness. This is a church that loves their community, a church that serves, a church that leads well, a shining light on a hill. But it's so easy for us to doubt our calling, to doubt that you're calling us to freedom, to hope, to courage, to repentance, to obedience. we so often run from that call, like Jonah, like Gideon. We want to go our own way because we think we know what's best, and it's scary to be obedient. I know that firsthand. Jesus, I pray that you would help us to submit to who you are in our life. You're our Father, you're our Lord, you're our King, you're our Master, and you're our friend. Please help us to obey. Help us to follow, and help us to surrender all to you. Help us to lay our doubts down at your feet. We love you, Jesus, and we ask all this in your name. Amen.